clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Dan Dunn. Got a big one coming up today. The co-founder of Dos Hombres Mezcal, also an actor of some note by the name of Bryan Cranston. That's right, Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad, played Lyndon Johnson on Broadway. He's currently starring in Your Honor on Showtime. One of the best actors we have here in these United States, and we're thrilled to have him on the show. And that is coming up in just a few minutes. I saw in the news the other day that Uber has reached an agreement to acquire the alcohol delivery service platform Drizly for about $1 billion in stock and cash. I got to tell you, it made me sad. And not just because I don't own any Drizly or Uber stock. I got sad because it got me thinking about the gig economy, which frankly came out of nowhere. And it wasn't that long ago, and it's practically taken over the world. Let's roll it back like 15 or 20 years or so. Now, when they came for the record stores, I said nothing because I was too busy stealing the life work of my favorite artists. When they came for the video rental places, I said nothing because The Sopranos was on. When they came for the bookstores, I said nothing because if you seen internet porn, I figured back then if I didn't start, there was no way I was going to get through all of it. And reading was just going to screw up my schedule. When they came for the electronics retailers, I said nothing because nothing is more terrible than an electronics store. But in 2012, Drizly launched, and they came for the liquor stores, and, well, I recall thinking that this is an aggression that will not stand. It was just a matter of time. The app-toting barbarians of Silicon Valley had successfully wrested cab hailing, hotel booking, and music buying away from the real world. Of course they would come to take away what I saw as the last sliver of our humanity, in-person booze purchasing. They wanted to free us from the burden of walking the actual touchable non-virtual aisles of our local quickie lickies. Before they launched, Drizly had secured millions in funding to finance its fast-paced expansion in major cities across the country, starting in Boston and New York. All this despite the fact that its name sounds more like a symptom of an STD than an enabler for lazy drunks. Now, Drizly might sound terrible, but it's downright Shakespearean compared to the names of the booze-on-demand apps it was competing with back then, like Nestrop, which now delivers weed, I believe, Minibar, and Saucy. That's Nestrop, Minibar, and Saucy. These sound more like sections of InStyle magazine than something an adult would use to get themselves a goddamn drink. Anyone involved in these operations ever seen the bottle of a whiskey bottle or survived a weekend bender without pissing themselves? And remember, Drizly launched in Boston and New York City. I ask you, prior to the pandemic, and after it's over for that matter, what legitimate reason could anyone in New York City who isn't paralyzed or agoraphobic have for using Drizly? We're talking about a city where you can go out blindfolded, walk into any door on any block, and have at least a 50-50 chance of coming out with a six-pack. I don't recommend actually trying that, though, because, you know, there's about a 90% chance you'll be shot, robbed, or sold into indentured servitude, making iPhones for 10 cents a month. I know what you're thinking. Shut up, old man. Get with the app economy. What's so bad about a service that delivers my favorite mezcal to my door at the click of a button? First off, I'm not old. I'm a grown-up. There's a difference. That difference is that I still only need half a Viagra for a good time in Vegas. Secondly, I'm dealing with COVID just like the rest of you people. COVID's got me too. I'm in lockdown. And right now, booze on demand is a hell of an idea. It's brilliant. It's essential. I know this. So I ask myself, really, what the fuck is bothering me about this? I went back and I researched Drizzly and other on-demand booze apps, and I found a piece from about 10 years ago in the New York Post where Roddy Radnia, the then 24-year-old founder of NestDrop, said, and I quote, "Our generation wants things efficiently and quickly." And he's right, but it would be a better world if he were wrong. Think about it. At the time that Post article ran, Roddy Radnia had only been of legal drinking age for 3 years. He hadn't had time to let the shabby majesty of a good liquor store get its hooks into him. The sublime pleasure of walking into a joint without really knowing what it is you came for and seeing all those possibilities lined up on the shelves waiting to be explored. Slowly walking down the aisles, picking up bottles and admiring the contents and the shape, reading the labels even though you don't understand what half the crap that's on them, wondering if forking over serious cash for an ultra-premium vodka really is worth it when you can pick up a liter and a half of Georgie or Popoff for less than a 10 spot. And think of today's 24-year-olds. How many of them have ever engaged in a 30-minute conversation with an enthusiastic store clerk about the varying levels of peatiness in Islay malts or the viability of winemaking in the American Southwest? They probably don't care to either, because going down to the liquor store takes time. So does talking to a real person in the real world. And time is a commodity the young seem intent on speeding up rather than savoring. Because the more time they save, the more they have to devote to things that really matter to them, like TikToking pictures of dog buttholes. That's what the kids are into these days, right? Look, I get that young people have as much right to spend their time not interacting with people in the real world as I do trying to score dates in the liquor section at Whole Foods. But this shift away from forging actual human ties to almost total reliance on inorganic electronic communication has happened virtually overnight. And it has been super accelerated thanks to COVID. It's fraught with all sorts of unintended consequences. Wasn't all that long ago when a world without Borders or Blockbuster or Sam Goody would have been hard to imagine. But then in a flash, they were gone. And maybe that isn't so terrible in the grand scheme of things. I don't know. What I do know is that I've got a lot of great memories of hanging out in record and bookstores, of meeting people and discovering new things. I've yet to experience a single transcendent moment placing an order on Amazon. There's just something terribly desperate and sad about a guy sitting home alone ordering Bushmills using Drizzly or Saucy or Dopey or Bashful. This is a man who's voluntarily locked himself up in a cell, communicating through the slot in the door 140 characters at a time. It's only a matter of time before you show up to find he's completely lost it and has created a wall-sized self-portrait with his own feces. Oh, pity the Drizzly delivery man. Not to worry, though. As usual, I have a solution. Today I'm proud to announce a new app I'm developing. It's called Drunker, D-R-U-N-K-R. And like most apps, it's a shameless ripoff of something else. In this case, I stole Grindr's idea almost wholesale. Both apps' primary purpose is to help men connect with other men for real-world fun. The only difference is that with Drunker, they're meeting to polish off a bottle of Jameson instead of each other's knobs. Just log into the app to see the other schlubs near you who could use some company and what their preferred hooch is. When it finds a match, the two of you are directed to the closest liquor store where hopefully the seeds of a long-lasting, meaningful relationship will be planted as the two of you get plastered. Don't forget to bring your mask. And if it turns out you aren't a good fit, say he's a buttoned-up gin guy and you like to get crazy on the tequila, well, don't worry. There's a real easy out should things start to get awkward. Just feign discomfort and scratch at your nether regions a few times. When he asks if everything's okay, that's when you tell him that you think you've got a nasty case of Drizzly. That's almost guaranteed to scare him off. And chances are, he'll leave you the bottle.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, a very quick break, because I know everybody wants Bryan Cranston, but please, I invite you just to listen to our sponsor here. And then Bryan Cranston. And then after Bryan Cranston, I'll tell you a little bit more about my Peloton experience. All right.
Hey, this is Tiffany Thiessen, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
Friends, I want to tell you about an exciting new thing I'm doing on an app called Stereo. Stereo is the social media app for the podcasting world. This forum, what you're hearing right now, is a one-way street. I talk, you listen. When I broadcast on Stereo, you get to join the conversation live by pressing a button, recording a message, and hitting send. Then me and my co-host, who usually is actor Colin Donnell, will play the message and respond to it. It's fun! And Colin and I usually do that every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Usually, I say. But if you want to find out when for sure I'm doing things, get the app, Stereo, download it. Follow me, at Dan Dunn. That's my name. Again, Stereo app, follow at Dan Dunn, and you'll get the updates. This is your chance to fire away with any and all questions you've been wanting to ask me. So do it. You'll be happy. Joining me now is the founder of Dos Hombres Mezcal. He also does some acting. In the biz, we call that a double threat. Please give it up for Brian Cranston. Brian.
Hello, everyone.
I always wonder, I for some reason, that's my intro. And I always wonder when I say that, give it up, or are people walking their dogs or on the bus and they just start breaking into spontaneous clapping? Do you think that happens?
Yeah, they actually have to stop, let go of the leash, clap, then pick up their duty bag again.
You don't want to be rude. You know, you should clap.
No, you don't.
Thanks for joining us, man. I got my special mezcal drinking shirt on. This is my mezcal drinking shirt right there. Western.
That's it. That looks pretty authentic there.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it's a Levi's original. So you got a mezcal brand, Dos Hombres, and I want to talk to you about it. I just poured myself some, and I would say this, Brian. One of the, you know, we can all agree COVID is a terrible, terrible thing. But we have to try to find the silver linings. If there's one silver lining for me, it's that any trepidation or embarrassment that I may have felt about drinking in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday, well, that went away months ago. So cheers, man. Let's do this.
Cheers, man. To you as well. I'm having a little sip of mine. It's neat.
So let's talk a little bit about your history. This brand has been around just about going on 2 years, right?
It'll be 2 years in July.
So if I have my understanding here is correct, you are not a big mezcal guy. This was something that Aaron Paul suggested to you.
I blame him for the whole thing. Yeah. We were, you know, it was about 3 years or so after Breaking Bad had finished production. And we were lamenting about the fact that we didn't get a chance to see each other anymore. You know, it's like, when you're leaving college and you think you're going to see these guys forever, oh, we're always going to be close. And then you go on with your life and you realize, oh, it's a natural separation. But we were talking about that because for 7 years on Breaking Bad, when you include the pilot, we got very close and we're still close. And this was kind of a reason to stay close every day. Aaron and I talk almost every day about Dos Hombres and other things and our families and things. It's great. And he got me into it. We were having sushi in New York City and he said, it's too early to work together. And yeah, it's true. And he said, we should go into the mezcal business. And I thought, you're out of your mind. Why would we do that? Now, I'm thinking back of my history. And my history with mezcal was back in high school and college, I had poor friends. I chose my friends very stupidly because I should have chose rich friends. But I guess we were all, you know, just scraping our money together and we would buy a big 12-pack or whatever of beer and we'd buy a bottle of booze and whatever was cheap. And it was usually mezcal. And I hated it. It smelled like cleaning fluid and it tasted the same. And we ended up using it like a punishment. So if someone arrived late or spilled their beer or told a stupid joke, they would have to drink the mezcal.
That's great.
And so when Aaron flashed forward now 4 years ago, and Aaron says, we ought to do a mezcal business. And I thought, that's what I was thinking of. I said, that's crazy.
And to give it, just so everybody out there knows what Brian's talking about, you know, mezcal. So mezcal is the category. Tequila is mezcal, not vice versa. But tequila now mostly owned by multinational corporations. Mezcal was always like the little stepchild in the corner. And there was a guy named Ron Cooper. I don't know if you're familiar with Ron. Ron is Del Maguey mezcal, and Ron was kind of the guy who really saw the potential for mezcal in the United States because it was all very small producers, as I'm sure even to this day it's that way, Brian. And I thought that might be something that would be appealing to you to go down there. And it's just little families that are making this. And the shit you were drinking was shit back then. There was not mezcal of quality available in the United States back then. There just simply wasn't.
True. And so Aaron and I decided, let's go down. But Aaron has a different palate than I do. He likes us. He comes from that whiskey and scotch world where he likes a nice burn. And I want to be romanced. I want to be invited into my artwork, whether it's architecture or painting or dance, or I want to be seduced into it. So we honestly didn't think we were going to find it. We went down to Oaxaca for a week and we tested maybe 80 or 90 samples of mezcals, and we just didn't find it. By the way, at first we wouldn't give it the nose. If it didn't smell good, we didn't even bother tasting it. And either some that were way too strong for me or too mild for him, or it was one of those, what is it? Little Red Riding Hood, or not Little Red Riding Hood. What the hell's that nursery rhyme?
Goldilocks. That's right.
Goldilocks.
This one's just right. God. Yeah, this one's just right.
Senior moment. And so we were in this little town called San Luis del Rio in Oaxaca, about 3 hours outside of the city.
South, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And there's only 400 people in this town, this little mountain village. They have one landline and they have no cell service at all. And we tried, we met a couple maestros there because that town is all what they do. And we met Gregorio and he became our maestro because we tasted his juice right out of the spigot. And it was unbelievable. And Aaron and I did this movie moment of looking at each other like, wait, is this it? But it was the last day. So we had to really think about, are we just willing it to be the thing, or is it really it? Well, we took that juice back to the States and we had two separate taste tests, blind taste tests with 8 different mezcals, ours included. And Aaron and I were involved in that. We didn't know which one was ours, the one we picked. We're very lucky that our friends and family who have unabashed will to say whether they like something or not. And they all voted at the top. So we were relieved. And we really found that Dos Hombres satisfies just every taste and every possible concoction that you can mix up. If you take it out, a sommelier taught me, you take a dip of whatever liquor it is, put it in your palm and let the alcohol dissipate and then smell it. And in ours, you'll smell fruit and flowers because in this little town, there are mango trees and groves. There are bananas. There are flowers.
That was the thing the first thing I was going to say, Brian, when I tried it. It's an extremely floral and fruity, and not fruity in a cloying way. It's vibrant. I would say that's the word that comes to mind when I'm drinking this mezcal. And what I'm drinking right now is the Espadin. You're doing two different. So everybody knows, you're listening about there. Espadin is the most widely used agave for mezcal. About 90% of all mezcal made is Espadin. As opposed to tequila, there's at least 20, but more around 40 species of agave that can be used. You do an Espadin, which is about 6 years old. That's how old that piña is. You're also doing a Tobala, correct? A 25-year. And that's known as the king of mezcals. But this Espadin that you have is so approachable. When you mentioned that you and Aaron had the different tastes, I got it immediately. You managed to somehow find the balance because... Yeah. Someone like Aaron who might like a peaty scotch from Isla, and then you're saying you want something that's way smoother, way easier to get into, and you kind of struck the proper balance with this.
Well, thanks, Dan. I really think we did too. It's we were very surprised actually, and now we feel that Dos Hombres is the best mezcal on the market, and we're our goal is to make it the number one mezcal in the country. Like I said, we haven't been in business yet for 2 years, and already we've cracked the top 10.
Well, to that end, Brian, I wanted to ask you. You said July of last year, so we're coming up on 2 years. Obviously, the pandemic struck, 7, 8 months into it, into the thing.
Yeah.
On this show, we've had everybody on this show, a lot of celebrity-affiliated brands. And I think the thing that separates them is if you're willing to go out and do the work in the community, in the bar community, as opposed to, and it seems by all accounts that you were ready to do that. You got to do a little bit of it in the beginning, but you haven't probably really gotten to do the Tales of the Cocktail, all the cocktail festivals and San Francisco World Spirits Competition and things like that. But were you looking forward to doing that? Were you looking forward to getting your feet wet in there?
Well, we actually have. We did Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans last year. Not last year.
It's 2 years ago when you came.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah, keeping track of time is so difficult right now. But we did the Tales of the Cocktail. It went over smashingly well. We went to Sobe down in Miami, and we're very active. I think Dan, when you find celebrity driven spirits brands that are thriving, I think what you'll find is that the celebrity is truly behind it. This is not a vanity production for Aaron and I with Dos Hombres. It's not that we're slapping our names on this and, hey, good luck with it and never see it. We're invested both monetarily and energy and our love for this. This is no different than us producing a movie or a TV show and being actively involved in the marketing of it. So we're very, very proud of it. We just won double gold in a blind test with Cigar and Spirits magazine. And they told us no mezcal has ever gotten that close. And it's like, wow, this is great. And I mean, the blind taste test is really the proof of the pudding. You have, that's the only way to do it.
And you guys won at San Francisco as well, right? 2 years ago?
We did. We won in San Francisco and New York and Berlin. And we keep collecting these things because it's really good. It's really delicious.
One of the things I've found across the board, whether I mentioned Soderbergh earlier, or Christie Brinkley or Matt McConaughey, all these people, without fail, they fall in love with this business. They really do. Some of them, I think, want to do this more than they want to act. After a while, yeah, they just like, they love it. And it's intoxicating. And I've been saving that one. So you, I wanted to, there's a book called The Mezcal Rush. I don't know if you've ever seen it before.
I have it.
Granville Green. So I want to, I'm going to help you out here, Brian. I want to give you a little story because I feel like you should have something to tell at cocktail parties. It's a little easily digestible nugget, okay? The Latin name agave is derived from the ancient Greek word for noble or splendid, aguaios, and that culture's mythology provides a cautionary tale for drinkers. The daughter of the goddess Harmonia and Cadmus, the king of Thebes, I guess, was named Agave. While under a spell from Dionysius, the so-called party god, she mistook her son Pentheus for a lion and tore him apart, limb from limb, during a drunken bacchanal. She didn't recognize her mistake until she brandished his head before her father. So there's a good lighthearted story for a cocktail party.
Boy, that's great, Dan. Yeah, thanks for telling me that.
So I want to talk about let's go back to this mezcal.
I just got to say that I hate when that happens. It's a very human mistake, very common.
Who hasn't torn apart a family member?
Child and cut the head up, yeah.
So there's a group down there called NAM. It's they set the standards for mezcal production. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. And there are basically two types of mezcal. The type one is 100% agave plant sugars. It's distilled from type two is a minimum of 80%. Yours is the type one, right? This is 100% distilled from agave, correct?
It's completely correct. There are two ingredients in our mezcal. It is smoked agave and mountain spring water.
Beautiful. And they're doing it the old school way with the Tohono wheel, a big giant stone wheel that crushes the agave.
In our on our label are the two donkeys, and the donkeys, as you know, are an integral part of the process of making old world mezcal. And talk about old world mezcal, our palenque, which is our processing plant. And when I say processing plant, you well know, this is very rural. There is no electricity at this place. There is no running water at this place. This is a very rural environment. But you don't need that in the process of it. You smoke the agave in those earthen pits, then take the chunks of agave into the tojonas. There, that the maguey is smashed by the stone wheel, and then it goes into the oak barrels for fermentation. And then after like 10 days in the oak barrels fermenting, then it goes into the copper stills for distillation. And it's so pure. It's such a beautiful, and it's, I mean, there's no additives. It's gluten-free. It's about 70 calories per ounce when you make it in a cocktail or in a one finger. And so it's just a beautiful thing to do. And I never get a headache on Dos Hombres when I drink it.
No, it's because you haven't hung out with me yet, Brian.
There we go.
I feel like you've just thrown down the gauntlet, my friend. I want to name a couple of your characters, but just a couple iconic characters that you have played. I joked about you. Obviously, you've played some amazing characters. You've won Emmy Award, Tony Awards. I'm going to throw out the character, and you just tell me what you think that character's go-to drink would be, okay? What would they drink? You ready for this?
Okay.
Hal from Malcolm in the Middle.
He would drink a champagne cocktail because that's what his wife would be drinking.
Okay. This is an easy one.
Have to sneak a beer.
Lyndon Johnson.
Well, he's a Cuddy man.
Cuddy Sark, that's correct.
That we know. That was his brand. He was true to that, and
in a styrofoam cup. Right. And that wasn't that how the story went? He would drive around a ranch in a styrofoam cup, and the Secret Service was trailing him and would have the bottle of Cuddy pull up next to him, refill
it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. What about Dr. Tim Whatley, Seinfeld?
Well, Dr. Tim Whatley would probably do like he'd have something like a vodka tonic with a little squeeze of lime or something like that. I think he would stay away from anything that would stain the teeth, like red wine. So exactly. He would definitely do that.
And that was was that the big break? Was that the big role for you? The first kind of big one?
Well, I suppose, I was a reoccurring character on that show. And I was very proud of it and very excited to be among those exceedingly talented and funny people and learn from them. Everything was a break for me. I think my way I approached it was to not have great expectations, have hopes and have dreams and keep working, but no attachment to some kind of outcome that whenever anything came my way, I was really grateful. And that's the way I've done it. I don't read my own reviews. I don't listen to I was just nominated for a Golden Globe, but I didn't even know they were announcing it that morning. I just don't want to pay too much attention to that because it puts your head in the wrong space for me. I just want to do the work. Whether it's a movie, whether it's Dos Hombres, I just want to put in the hours, talk about it, and promote, and because I'm proud of it.
I remember watching Malcolm in the Middle, and then the first time I saw Breaking Bad, it was such a departure. You know, I mean, I can't even believe it's the same guy. You mentioned the feeling you got when Aaron and you both tasted that mezcal, Gregorio's mezcal, and you went, shit, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Do you know, with a role like Walter, I mean, because we're talking about one of the most iconic television roles of all time, right? Do you know in the beginning, do you have any inkling that this could be what it turned out to be?
None whatsoever. There's just no way. The only thing that, and I tell young actors this all the time, as you go along with your career, the only thing you can do is to get very adroit at being able to identify well-written material. If you can master that, identifying really well-written material and attach yourself or try to get connected with that material, that's your saving grace. Every actor knows that for performance art, it's all about the writing. what is on the page that inspires us to then bring it to life. And that's Vince Gilligan for Breaking Bad. That's Linwood Boomer for Malcolm in the Middle. That's Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld for Seinfeld. That's being around them. And let me give you another example. It's like I did a one-day job on a movie that I loved, and I went after it, and I wanted to be in it. But there really wasn't a part for me. But I wanted to be in it. And because I was so moved by the script. And that movie was called Little Miss Sunshine. And that was many years ago, but it's such a beautiful little movie and such hope and such heart and fun and funny. And everybody then said to me, oh my God, you were so great. You were so great in that movie. And I realized I wasn't great because I was a one-day role. It was just a slice of pie. I was just doing my job. But it made me think, oh, because they love the movie, a high tide raises all boats. So everybody connected with that movie, no matter how big or small your role was, you were great. So it's like that's what we take in with Dos Hombres. It's like we want to make everybody in and around that feel great and feel like they're part of something that's exciting.
That brings me to the next. Well, first of all, the final guy I was going to ask you was Walter White, but do you remember what Walter's drink was? You have to remember, right?
He was bourbon. He was like Whistle Pig or something.
Wasn't it Dimple Pinch?
Dimple Pinch.
Dimple Pinch, which is a blended scotch. Not a lot of people know. Right. Now, and I had to look that up. I was looking, I was like, God.
Yeah,
man,
me too.
I don't remember. I'd heard of Dimple Pinch, but I don't think I've ever had it. You know, it's a very obscure blended scotch.
It is. And it was something that Vince Gilligan loved, and he loves bourbon too. And so because he loves bourbon so much, I was thinking, you know, it's been over 7 years since we shot Breaking Bad. So I've forgotten that all that stuff that starts to slip away. And thanks for the reminder. But I'm thinking, it was Whistle Pig, Dimple Pinches, one of those funny names. It's like, what is something like that? But yeah, that's what he drank.
What's your, what do you like to do cocktail wise with the Dos Hombres?
I like to, I like to have the alcohol forward. But I also like a little bit of sweetness to it. It suits my palate. So I'll shake up some mango, fresh mango juice, with some always fresh, lime juice and maybe a little squeeze of agave syrup or something like that. I will replace, my Dos Hombres in a margarita, which gives it a nice little spice. It's so good. And make my own again. But I would encourage everybody listening. It really makes a difference to use fresh ingredients. Please don't use the plastic bottle of lime juice. It really does make a difference. Get a citrus squeezer. You'll be happy that you did and as fresh ingredients as possible, with little slices of jalapeno that I put in the shaker and do it up, man. That's great.
I say it all the time on this show, Brian. It doesn't matter if you have the best, finest spirit in the world. If you put shitty mixers in there, you're going to have a shitty cocktail. Doesn't matter how good the product is. This is great product. What I'm actually looking forward to trying this. I have the Fever Tree grapefruit soda. Yeah, I think really this good. With the grapefruit soda is going to be really delicious.
That's a Paloma, and it really, really is tasty. Wait till you taste this. And you can do like a sugar rim if you want to offset the sourness of the grapefruit. The thing about it is, this is art. And I've always said in my work, when I work on Broadway, and an audience is, you know, in one performance, they're not reacting well. And you know, someone in the cast might say, I don't know, they're really dead today or something. I go, well, an audience is never wrong. So I don't know if it's them or if it's us. Maybe we're not on our toes today. Let's bring them the story. Let's bring it out in them. And that's the same thing in cocktails, that however you like it, you are correct. Don't let anybody tell you that what you like to drink is silly or whatever. It's right for you. Good for you. And to experiment, whether it's Dos Hombres or some other, a Dimple Pinch or Whistle Pig or whatever you want to sample, you know, get out of your comfort zone a little bit and try something that you haven't tried. And that's where bartenders come in. God, these, and I feel for them so much in these days now where there's so much closures and it's so hard. For them.
Well, that, and there's so much, and there's a lot. I was just messaging with a friend of mine today who has a place down here called Hatchet Hall. I don't know if you've ever been to Hatchet Hall down in Venice. And a big cocktail bar. They got the old man bar in there, and he owns it. And it is rough, and I'm torn because I want, like everybody else, to contain what's going on. But then I also feel like it's a little bit crazy to me that malls are open, things like this are open, but then these bars, especially out here where you can do the, they're not allowed. Now they are. They just reopened. But it's crushing to see people. I know so many people in this business that have worked their entire lives to build something for themselves, and it, you know, is it going to hang on? Are they going to? I just heard the Daily Pint in Santa Monica's closing, which is like an iconic, one of the greatest whiskey collections in the United States, not just in L.A. The Daily Pint in on Pico in Santa Monica, and I just heard from a friend today that they're not coming back, and it's devastating. But I also feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel, and we're all just going to have to get out there and bust our ass and try to get, spend your money and try to get these places going again.
But I was thinking of, and that reminds me of the bartenders who really are the gatekeepers to really phenomenal cocktails. So I'd encourage your listeners to next time to when you go to a bar, really ask, instead of just ordering what you always drink, ask the bartender anything that you're mixing up lately that you're really excited about. And these mixologists are artisans, and they just do. I go in there and I'll say, you make me what you would want to drink. And then I just, you know, you literally break the ice with them and you have a cocktail of a sip. And, you know, it's not, I love my mezcal, but it's not that it's like, oh, you can only drink mezcal around me. It's like,
you can do other. I mean, I'll tell you, Brian, I don't know about you, but I think I might actually cry the first time I get to go back into all these things that we took for granted for so long, you know, like I can't wait for the day that I can hunker down at a bar and someone's sitting next to me, a stranger, you can strike and you can order a drink and buy somebody. I can't, it's almost overwhelming to think about it. And it's only been not even a year, but man, it just, I'll never take that for granted again. I won't.
Never take that experience of sitting down next to a stranger and having a chat and then finding out, you know, that maybe he dated your girlfriend at one time and all of a sudden you get into an argument, then you get into a fist fight, you lose a tooth, he loses an eye. We took that for granted, all those great experiences.
It's great. I mean, right before this happened, I was in New York City and I was meeting a friend and I was having a drink down in Soho. And the guy sitting next to me, I look, I say, boy, he looks familiar. And it was Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, U.S. attorney from Southern District of New York, who ran afoul of Donald Trump and got fired. And I just turned to him and I says, hey, man, I'm a fan, man. I love what you're doing. I love what you stand for. And
did it turn into a bar fight?
I kicked the shit out of Preet Bharara at the end. Boy. Yeah. Well, I found that he slept with my girl.
He did.
Yeah. Who hasn't Preet Bharara slept with? Well, listen, Brian Cranston, I got to tell, this has been a real thrill having you on. I've been a fan for a long time and you've brought me a lot of enjoyment through your work, through your acting work, and now the mezcal. I really love it. I encourage everybody out there, Dos Hombres. Are you on the social media with the Dos Hombres?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, doshombres.com. Yeah, we're all over it.
I'm going to post some videos, a little video from this thing if you want to look. Brian, he's looking very handsome right now. Yeah, you are. Oh, well. Yeah, you're holding it. It's treating you all right, this quarantine.
Hey, you know, you make the best of it. And at Dos Hombres Instagram.
At Dos Hombres. And Brian, and check out Brian's show on Showtime, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Your Honor on Showtime. We don't get into the showbiz too much here, but yeah, you got that show too. Your Honor on Showtime. He plays a judge doing the best by his kid. I've only watched a couple episodes and I've loved them. It's great. Brian Cranston, thank you for being here on the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Dan.
Before we go today, friends, I want to give you an update on my Peloton. I've talked about it before on the show. I ordered a Peloton back in November, and we are in mid-February now, and I've not received it. But I have been paying for it every month. That's right. By the time this thing comes, I think I will have made about 4 or 5 payments on the bike. But I did get an email the other day. They finally threw me a bone. They said when the bike does arrive, which they're telling me is going to be next week. We'll see. But when it does arrive, they're going to give me 2 free months of the thing, you know, the classes online. I'm going to get 2 free months of that. That's what I get for waiting this long. I realize this is a uptown problem, a first world problem. I get it, but I'm just letting you know. So I haven't had the Peloton. So how I'm staying in shape, you know, I drink for a living. I do the show. I do juice cleanses. And by the way, I'm letting everybody know this is not an ad. I'm just letting you know. I go with this thing called Press Juicery here in Venice, California. I do a 3-day juice cleanse. It really gets me straight. I get a lot of people that ask me that. Like, how do I like to drink? I like it, but how do I get straight? Do the juice cleanse. You take a couple of days off. I do 3 days. You can do 2. It really helps me, clears me out, gets me going. And then the other thing I've been doing, and I'm going to admit this, I'm you know, we all know about the Alka-Pop trend. It's a trend. It's crazy now. You know, we're talking about White Claw and all that stuff. The seltzers, alcoholic seltzers. I just tried one that I really love called Basic Hard Seltzer. Again, not an ad. I'm just telling you because I dug it. Comes in 4 flavors, pamplemousse, cranberry, lemon, cucumber. 90 calories, 4.5 ABV, no added sugar, gluten-free, 1 carb. I drank them during the Super Bowl. I drank a bunch. I like the cranberry and the lemon the best, but it's good stuff. You can tell I'm struggling because I'm supposed to be this guy drinking, you know, 25-year-old single malts, but I like them. I like them. Yeah, it's refreshing. You don't put on a lot of weight when you're drinking that stuff. So I'll stop now. But Basic Hard Seltzer, check it out. With that, I want to thank you for joining us. And us, that's me and Brian Cranston. Of course, my thanks go out to him. Check out Dos Hombres. It's really, really good. Mezcal, follow them on Instagram. Follow us at WWD_podcast. And my personal Instagram is at TheImbiber. I want you to join Stereo. Get that Stereo app. Follow me, Dan Dunn. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific has kind of been my time to go live on Stereo. You can comment. Tell me what you think of this Brian Cranston episode. I'd love to hear it. Till next week, or next episode, next week. I don't know what the hell we do next episode. Till then, peace.